I'm Humphrey Hawksley, and thank you for joining the Magazine Show podcast brought to you by Golster, the experts in health and well-being, with a range of fascinating guests who stimulate, educate, and make us laugh. Hello and welcome to both our live and our podcast audience. This is the Golster Magazine Show. I am your host, Humphrey Hawksley, and today we are going to smash down those barriers that divide us. I am not talking about those intractable faraway wars, but that need to be understood and to express our voice. That's a basic human need. We'll talk about managing our fears, how to change them, and in short, how to understand ourselves better than we do. My guest today comes from the American South and was very shy as a child, which is why perhaps she knows about our hopes and dreams and the realities and how to make good things happen is why she is here with us today. We are going to talk for 45 recorded minutes. Please put your questions and comments in the chat whilst we do that, and that will drive our conversation. Then when we end at the podcast recording, we're going to open the floor to our live audience to talk directly to. Ah, yes, I almost forgot. She is sitting patiently there. Welcome, Kendra Q. Dodd, to the Golster Magazine Show.
Thank you. Thank you. I am so honored to be here. I'm excited to be here. It's early morning for us, so my favorite part of the day. So I am even more excited because I can talk during the time that I am most appreciative of.
You've got the energy.
Yes, I do. The energy is there.
Energy. So, well, tell us, where are you and what time is it?
It is 7 o'clock in the morning, Central Time. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota now.
Okay, Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, and there's one question before we get onto the really serious stuff. Kendra Q. Dodd. What does a Q stand for?
Quintessential. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking.
You've asked that before.
it stands for Quinetta. That's my middle name.
Quinetta.
Yes.
God, I love that name.
I'm going to tell you, I intentionally, part of why I do that is one, for remembrance, but as a child, I hated my middle name. Oh, I was so upset with my parents.
For calling you Quinetta.
Yeah, by giving me that name.
Well, what do you think of being called Humphrey is? I mean, you and me, we have a shared trauma.
There we go. Exactly.
Why didn't you like it?
I at the time, too, my first name was very unique. I didn't meet my first Kendra until my first year in the university.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like it was too singled out, right? I told you I was a shy child, and so people would have questions like Q and what does that and what name is that? And, you know, Kendra, what is that? And I just didn't like the attention of even that question.
You say in your book, which we have you, that your book is called Perspectives, Building Meaningful Connections by Learning 4 Steps to Courageously Speak Up. And from that, you host conferences and teach people and come on to shows like this, for which we're very grateful. But a shy child, give us the environment that you were growing up in. I mean, big town, small town?
Small town. But I went from one small town to another. I moved from my parents' hometown to another town when I was about 3.5, 4 years old. Uh-huh. And so that was jarring for me because I came from a very big family. My mom has a large family. She's one of 10. I have 28 first cousins. 20. Can you imagine?
That is a big family.
So I came from this very, you know, and I was even shy then. Uh-huh. And then we had to move once my father was an officer, a police officer. They call it state troopers. There's different type of officers. After he finished the academy, we had to move. And so that was very jarring for me. And people, once again, I didn't even like people having a unique name. Can you imagine moving to a new city that everyone did know your name because there were certain reasons why people knew we were coming to town? Yes, it was challenging for me.
And tell us, the American South, when you were growing up, we over here in Britain have this sort of view of it, To Kill a Mockingbird, Elvis Presley and Tupelo, that sort of thing. I mean, is it, and all those John Grisham, Time to Kill, and that, it's not like any of those, but what is it like?
you know, I think there is a uniqueness. I have moved around in my adult life, and there's certain things I do miss about it, and there's certain things I don't miss. But to kind of describe it, it has a very nurturing feel to it, honestly, overall. You have the, how are you doing? They use words like sugar and honey, right? Enduring words that seems very comforting. But I think what I miss about it in certain areas that were different is, at least you knew where you stand and how people felt, right? You knew the people that were for you. You knew the people that were against you. And it created some structure of clarity, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, sometimes it's bad, but I would say it's good too. And knowing kind of your community. And so I think those are the good things about the South. But that is where you have to think about, that is the Mecca of the starting of the United States. Really. And so you have a lot of history. And so when you have history, and there's other states that I lived in that were, you know, later in history, that then there's a lot of traditions that you maybe have to break.
And that was, the Civil War was all about that, wasn't it?
Yes.
And there are some down in the South that that still think it was wrong.
True.
So that was, because I traveled through that and had some amazing conversations about that. And in this environment that you've just vividly described for us, you were a shy child and you were saying that, you know, you knew where you stood and all the rest of it. How did you, or did you break through that shyness? And what is it that makes a person shy?
I never thought of, why am I shy?
Yes.
I am still very much the introvert. I've learned to adapt. I think the biggest thing is when you, and with anything, right? How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? That book, or the there was one of How to Influence Someone in 2 Minutes or something like that. But the whole connoisseur of that is everyone wants to belong and feel valued and be seen, right? Not from a, okay, big point, but you can get people talking when you find the thing in which is in their heart that they love. Everyone has a certain desire. I think they were built with that, right? Of what is important to them. And mine is helping others, helping people, service. And I grew up in that environment, and that caused me, that is more greater than my shyness. So I think anything to bring you out of something is finding something greater than the fear that you have.
So do you give me an example of when you discovered that, because you had your big family, were you shy within your family or?
I was.
As well, talking out against your closest.
I was shy within my family as well, because I always was a peculiar in the way of thinking, right? I always questioned common, you know, whatever the structure. I said very much in the South, there was traditions, right? Oh. I would question those traditions. Like I was very... One of my grandmothers I was very, very close to, and nicknames are very common. And this was the big family. Everyone had a nickname. I guess it was easier to remember the kids, right?
Right.
Like, instead of remembering the name, let me give them a nickname. And I was going to be labeled. I think they said it was like 3. So even though I didn't like my name, I wasn't going to be called something I wasn't given. And so my grandmother, which I love her dearly, tried to give me a nickname. And I said, that is not my name. Could you please call me by my name?
And what was the nickname? Can you tell us?
Oh, I will. Because you were thinking, oh my gosh, pig.
What?
P-I-G.
God. And was this an affectionate?
It was supposed to be affectionate. I was a chubby child.
Okay. So, and you're 3 or 4 years old then.
Right. Yes.
Uh-huh. So has that left a sort of lasting thought?
You know what the sad thing is? One of my cousins that are younger than me was honored with that name, and they still, as an adult, call her that name.
Oh, my goodness. But you fought that, age 3 or 4.
Yes.
You fought against that. But you accepted your middle name, Quinetta, but you fought your nickname.
And let's be clear, I only accepted my middle name in my adult career. Right. It was only maybe a decade ago of acceptance. Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, what you're telling us, I think, is something that pretty much everybody goes through at some stage. You know, an elderly or an older relative will want you to do something you don't want to do. And you made a decision to fight against that. But at the same time, you're shy at yes. expressing yourself generally. Mm-hmm. Just sum those thoughts up. And then I want to get into what you do for a living.
Yes. Well, I think the biggest thing is you when you are different or think differently than someone else, and you realize that if someone says something that I didn't think that, is it worth mentioning, right? Is it worth kind of the book of being courageous enough to say something? And so it made it very challenging of being shy of, should I speak or will they think I'm weird, right? Would I be thinking of the anomaly? That's the fear of being out, you know, ostracized. And so I would think that I think everyone has a purpose, right? If you've made it through the billions of all the challenges of being born, I then believe that there is a purpose for you. And I think hiding that purpose is a disservice to you and actually other people, because there's a reason and a place and a time and a season of you being born that you are to make an impact on each other. We are to be a village. We are to be a community. And so that is what I started learning. And I still have to learn that in certain places in my life or environments or stages, that everyone's voice is important.
Was there a certain time that you remember, a sort of breakthrough point that you actually said, okay, I might be shy, but in this particular room at this time or in this conversation, I am going to do this, and then you haven't looked back?
Right. I really, it's the rights of people and their voice. I always would go to that person that was in the corner. Like if I was in school, I was in the schoolhouse and I saw someone sitting by them. Like I'm okay sitting by myself, but I saw someone that seemed lonely or didn't feel like they belonged. I would always just endear them and speak with them. And I could move from place to place of different environments or cliques, right? Or clubs within school. And so that is, and speaking up for them always was very important to me. To the point that they have superlatives when you graduate in high school. You're given different identities. And so I won best personality. And I it wasn't because I was popular. It was because I went and serviced people that maybe weren't serviced before or created friendships with people. And so that's, you know, there isn't a particular time, maybe when people were being teased. I would speak up for people being teased. And that began the voice for speaking for others.
Okay, that's fascinating. Now, for our audience, are any of you shy? How do you break through? Is it by speaking up for others? Or I'll ask you this question, Kendra. Supposing there's not someone that you have to advocate for, how do you, are you still shy when you need to speak up for yourself in a group?
Yeah, that's a good question. More times than not, I will find it more, because if I am mistreated, it depends on where it is. It depends on the avenue in which I find my value. I don't need to find my value in others, but I don't like when others are mistreated to have that. And so it has to do with what I think of that person's behavior. Because I realize sometimes people's behavior has to do with their own insecurities and their own fears and perspectives. And so I do find it harder when it's me. So here's an example that I'm actually thinking of. This was during my adult life and career. I was with some colleagues. I was still, I didn't have my own business. I was in corporate America. And we were traveling. And it was a group of my colleagues. We were traveling. And we went through the TSA. That's when you went through your, you know, everything, that your bags and everything through
passport
the x-ray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was grabbing my bags and my laptop, and I heard one of the officers that, you know, was overseeing scream and said, "Stop it." And I kind of jolted and actually said a word that wasn't nice and said, I'm talking to you. No. And she was screaming. And I was like, is she talking to me? What is going on? And I realized then in her screaming and the things she was saying that she was talking to the employee across from me in the conveyor belt. And I looked at her face and then I looked at the supervisor and my colleague said, Kendra, don't do it. And I'm like, this is wrong. She is berating her employee in front of us. And so I would have probably passed on allowing that to happen if it was me. I would have grabbed my bags and kept going. But I just, something in me of her, and she ended, I couldn't remember all that she was saying, but the part that I remember most after all these years, so she said, she pointed to her shoulder and she said, that's why I have this and you don't. And it was her badge of being an officer of a higher rank. And I walked over to her and I said, this is all very unnecessary.
And what
and is she said, you don't understand what I have to go through with her.
And then
I said, that doesn't justify your behavior as being, like you said, pointing, you know, the superior.
Awesome.
And I continued to say of expectations of what I think a manager is, what a leader is, and how I'm disappointed and how it was embarrassing. And she said, you don't understand. I said, no, you don't understand of how then she'll never respect you if you treat her that way.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, when she first started, when I thought it was me, I really was trying, I was just going to ignore it. But when I realized that she was doing it to someone else, that's when I spoke up.
Okay. It's a sort of the service that you do. Now, how much of that has got to do with you being the daughter of a police officer?
You know, I keep a balance. It probably had to do with the fact that I realized they're human beings, right? I grew up with other officers in my life. And so it used to really bother my father when people would use him as a weapon with their children. Like, if you don't act up, I'm going to get that police officer on you, or didn't make them human beings and for they what they're supposed to be. And so I probably feel more comfortable speaking to officers because I realize that they're human beings and I present them with respect, but also as they go through things just like everyone else. So I probably feel more comfortable where people sometimes are very scared of the uniform, where I'm not as much.
Yeah, because as part of your family, you saw it hanging up and being in the washing machine and everything like that, didn't you? And I want to now get into the into the book and basically what you say and what you do. You talk about SEED, S-E-E-D.
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
So SEED, I think there's two things. So I call them bridge moments. There are times, so my example that I gave was a bridge moment. A bridge moment is when something happens where someone says something. It could be we're having a conversation, Humphrey, and then you say something that kind of makes my hair stand up, makes me feel a little uncomfortable, makes me maybe swallow my throat, and I let it pass. But then it creates a perception of what I think of you, and I don't try to ask for clarity. I don't try to ask. And I call that a bridge moment of there's an opportunity where we can bridge for understanding, but instead I move on. And so I think what happens is people, when they get to the bridge moments, they don't feel comfortable speaking up because they don't know how. They don't have a guide. And so as the SEED method is the way in which you grow. And the disclaimer I say is that just like a seed, you don't like you plant a seed and then expect it to grow within the next day, but it's a planting of building relationships. It's the planting of speaking up. And so it's an acronym. So S stands for situation. E stands for evaluate, meaning yourself. The second E stands for empathy. And the D stands for decide and determine. And so the situation is you have to realize sometimes maybe you don't speak up at that bridge moment time. Maybe you say, I have to think about it, but still I encourage to think about it. And so think about the situation only from the facts. So what's the situation here? Okay. The situation with the officer was apparently I found out that the person wanted to take a break. And the officer said that you couldn't take a break now. And so apparently the officer did not like the behavior of the employee. And so I was observing this and the employee was frustrated. Those are the facts. It was very clear she was frustrated and there was no response from the employee. those are the facts. I'm not going to embellish by my feelings. I'm not going to say that the officer is rude. I'm not going to say that the person, you know, felt, you know, humiliated. I don't know. I never talked to the employee if she was humiliated or not. I don't know how the person was feeling. Maybe she was a bad employee. I don't know that part.
Yeah.
So what are the situations by fact? Okay. Because we can embellish by our own experiences and then evaluate what triggered me to feel the way I was feeling, right? Was it because I think with my background, right? It has to do with your experience that the officer is giving all bad officers a rap, right? That's making them look bad. And that I know officers are good leaders and, you know, there's always challenges with that. Or do I really think that, you know, so what in my experience is making me then feel disappointed in her behavior? And how am I feeling about it and why? So that's me evaluating my triggers and understanding. Uh-huh. Then when I go to the person, right, and that's the choice, and you don't have to. You can still use the SEED method without speaking up. I encourage the speak up. Uh-huh. But sitting in it of then how could that person be feeling? That person may be overwhelmed. Maybe that person never was trained. Maybe that person is following the guidance of another supervisor, and that's how that supervisor. So I have to give grace and empathy to that person's situation and behavior. Uh-huh. Not in judgment.
Yeah.
And then the D is decide on, do I move on? Do I have a conversation? How will I move forward to have closure? Because if we don't decide on what that closure is, it will always sneak up on us of that situation or that feeling again with that person or within the scenario. Yep. And so that is the SEED method. Those are the four steps that will really help, I think, guide just internally, like I said, you don't have to speak up, but also guide the conversation.
Of speaking up. Was
of speaking up.
Now, yes. I didn't want to get into this, but I have to now because it's in my mind. And I did say in the intro that we wouldn't get into it. But what you were talking about, understanding the viewpoint of the two people there and understanding who you are and that viewpoint. Now, in our politics over here, and I think over there and all over the world, you have political leaders that are meant to be represented yelling at each other and refusing for one second to understand any element of what the other person is saying. How do you think that culture, which we're seeing in our societies now, that leadership culture, is seeping down into the normal person? Somebody is here saying something, you come up and say, well, that's not actually, you know, I don't... And instead of trying to understand each other, they're trying to defeat each other.
Mm-hmm. You said the last part, they're trying to defeat each other, and that will never lead to progression. As a natural human being, it's easier to blame someone else. It's easier to find an scapegoat. It's easier to find the other, and it's not me. I've done travels. I was just in South America a few weeks ago, and I try to find spaces in which people will just talk to me normally. So what I decided to do was get a haircut, right? I try to find normal spaces because that is the perfect place for people to feel comfortable and just have conversation.
Yeah.
And so I was hearing these things and she was, you know, I try to find the similarities, right? Like you were saying, the similarities within Britain, the similarities that we have within politics. But this is what she said at the end. And I've heard people say this and on both sides is, well, at least we're not as bad as you in the United States.
Oh. And do you feel that in that the U.S. is going in that sort of polarized
way? I think it's
in
any way. I've been in Canada and they'll say, we're not as bad as the United States. Or if you're Britain's like, oh, thank goodness we got rid of you. Right. It's just, it's this joke or this concept or the Americans saying, well, we were better off without you. There's this have and have nots or this superiority or this caste system that we create that what I am is not as bad as you. And it doesn't lead accountability to yourself. Remember the E of the first E is evaluating me, and people are missing both of the E's in that.
I just wanted because you were the example you gave us was speaking up for somebody else that's in a problem. How do you speak up for yourself?
Yes, I think in being able to do that is following the SEED method. Is I think in speaking up for myself is. First of all, there's a song. I don't know if you've heard of Kenny Rogers. He's a country singer.
I love Kenny Rogers.
Yes. So there's a song, Texas Hold'em, right? Know when to hold them, know when to fold them, is I will speak up when I feel like there needs to be a change, or they're within someone's behavior and how they're treating me, or within the identity that it's worth it, right? People have to be coachable. So sometimes speaking up just to speak up, I want to do movement, but or at least of the change in how I'm treated. I think there are certain times I've spoken up is because I will not, as a human being, want to be treated this way, or I want a behavior modification. I'm not trying to. Here's the thing. I've come to the demise, right? And I'm joking, demise, meaning I had to, it took a struggle to get there, of realizing I can't change what people think, but I can change within my surroundings of how people treat me in behavior.
Okay. Okay. So, and that sounds the way you described it, that the first time that that crossed your mind was when your grandmother tried to give you a nickname.
Yes.
and you haven't looked back.
I haven't. And, you know, my parents teased me because they were like, oh, and that was the beginning of Kendra, right? That they saw this shy girl, but in this ability. And it's amazing when I'm in this space, if people that have met me professionally, professionally speaking, on a stage, engagement, they'll tell me that I just think that I'm an introvert. And then if I have family members still to this day that can't believe what I do for a living because they know me within that realm, but I'm in a safe place that I can be me, that I can be shy, that I can just be happy reading a book in a corner somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think there's a difference. And I will tell you, at one point in my life, I was like, can I just be what I prefer to be? And that is an introvert by myself, sitting, you know, I'm okay being by myself. But what I realized is I kept being in places and I was getting very exhausted. And I kind of was, you know, saying, God, why did you create me this way? Right? Right? Can you make me something different? And what I realized is that we don't grow in the comfort zone. And so anything that's challenging, if you speak a lot and then you got to learn how to allow others to use their voice, that's uncomfortable. And so I think all of us have to grow within the uncomfortable. And that's where growth is. And my uncomfortable is speaking. And so sometimes other people uncomfortable may be listening because they don't know how.
Yeah.
And so looking at that, I think, is very unique. And so if someone speaking up for myself is important when I think there's a certain right that's being taken away from me.
And then speaking a little bit like we are now in a sort of rambling conversation, for want of a better thing. You're not making a point. You're not trying to change me. I'm not trying to change you. We're just sort of chewing the grass, as they say. Are you happy in that situation? Can you just...
I love it. I love being within... that environment and that setting, because it's an openness of, oh, wow, I would have never thought of that. And that is where growth, because one of the trainings I use is, I think I've done different trainings and I've had people come up and say, I don't want to listen, right? If it's mandatory at an organization, I don't want to listen to you. And what I'll do as a visual, I'll have a picture frame that's we go by inches, so 5 inches by 7 inches, so a small one, and say, this could be your perspective if you only live in a certain place or ideas. And so I get a big picture frame and then I have a picture frame like this. The more we engage with others and listen to them, the more our perspective, doesn't mean it changes. It just, we understand where people come from, the broader in which we can see the picture.
Yeah. That's we've got Emma, who's in our audience here, talking about your exemplary story in the conveyor belt at the airport. That was excellent, Kendra, to speak up against any forms of unfairness. How do you decide? I mean, we've got with us now all sorts of apparent unfairness going on that comes in our news bulletins, in our communities, on our Twitter feeds and all the rest of it. You can't speak up against them all.
No. No, I don't.
So what do you do?
Of course, everyone speaks up against what that is in their heart. Remember, I said we all are born with a certain thing. And so you know, there are certain things I don't speak up on, right? Because they don't hold a within my value system. So if you go through my book, the first part of the book is going through what are my values. And we prioritize those values. And so, of course, and here's the thing, we shouldn't have the all same values, because then we couldn't other, I wouldn't speak up on this versus that.
Yeah.
Right. So I think of you knowing what your values are and then being concerted on how then to speak up for that value system that's important to you.
So let us know you a little bit better. And you had the Good Samaritan element in the airport. What values are closest to your heart?
I really believe in the humanity of humans, of everyone feeling like there's a purpose in their life. And there's a lot of times that people don't. And that can be, honestly, the more I've done work, a very westernized viewpoint. You know, that you are individually important. And so therefore you have a right to speak your voice, because that culturally is not open for all cultures around the world, honestly.
Culturally, it's not open, but within our human makeup, that is the way we are built.
Okay.
So what is the impact on somebody that is unable to speak up, or to speak up would have consequences?
And that's what makes it challenging, right? And that is where, for me, right, that is part of my value system of how can we look at the individual and not the collective group.
Yeah.
When we start doing collective groups and labeling and creating those things and not the human, it is very easy then to fall culturally into blame of this party versus that party.
And Lee Pycroft, who is one of our Goldster leaders, tolerating uncertainty and surfing it can lead to significant growth. Uncertainty. It's good for us. It's out of our comfort zone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's hard, right? That is why I look at, you know, human behavior of if you're in a bad relationship and you leave that relationship, why is it that you go back to that relationship or you end up in another relationship just like the relationship you were trying to leave?
Yeah.
It was because regardless of what it is, you were comfortable in understanding the patterns, talking about uncertainty of what would happen next.
Now I want we've gone deeply into your values and your childhood and the nickname that you never had. Your corporate role now, if corporate's the right word, what you do, who do you speak to? And you've told us what your message is, but how do you address them? And what are you trying to achieve in those sessions?
I think the evolution, I've spoken in different environments and settings. I mostly corporations, and then corporations have partnered with me in different ways. I could do it in a speech or a keynote. I could do it in a workshop, which I really enjoy those. One of the things I've changed over the years within that workshop, because we're talking about how am I feeling and modification, is I prefer to do series. Right. So organizations will say, can you come and do 4 hours? I said, I would, if, you know, local and if it's willing, I would prefer to do 1 hour or 2 hours in two times or 4 times in 1 hour, because people need time to process change. And so what happens is if you're doing what I'm doing in some of the work, I may think, oh, wow, I need to think about my behavior and how to modify that. And they need time to practice that and then come back. So that's what I've changed a little bit within my training. And then the part that I'm really enjoying more and more is I'll do individual coaching. Okay. And so I'll do career and executive coaching, and I'll do a time span. So 6 months, 9 months, even a year of spending time with individuals, and companies will, you know, support that and sponsor that for their leaders. And it's mostly for leaders.
So this is to get the leaders to communicate better, to understand better, to achieve their goals. It sounds a cliche, but how to get to where they want to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Give us the three things I just said. give us your stump line on it.
Right. I think that is we have to have probably my line is what I say to my, especially to my individuals that I coach, is that people don't change, they transform. And so I say that mantra a lot to help them not to be hard on themselves, to challenge themselves. Because if you learned a pattern and if you're used to it, you can change your clothes. I can change my eyeglasses. I can change my hairstyle. That is very quick. If I'm trying to be something else and be better, it takes time, and that's a transformation, and that's a process.
Right.
And so that's what I tell them a lot when they expect their employees to change a certain way. I'm like, nope, remember, people transform. Or they expect, oh, I should know better. I can't believe that, you know, I was doing better and then that employee made me upset. Remember, we transform. That doesn't say that the next time you want. And so that is my biggest mantra that I use, is that people don't change, they transform.
Because I mean, one of the lines that you've got in the book is to help slow down knee-jerk reactions.
Yes.
Because it does take time to understand empathy and make those decisions. Another line you have that I love is, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Who said it and what does it mean?
It's unknown. I don't know. I have it actually out up in my office as well. It says unknown author. I don't know who said that, but I love it because if I don't change, who will? And if you're not happy with something, right, that's the opposite of the insanity, right? Doing something at the same time. But if nothing changes, nothing will change. And so when I am going through or talking to someone of, okay, where do you change? And so I'm licensed with an organization now that has an assessment, and I love it. And matter of fact, one of the owners, I don't remember his name, is actually from Britain created this assessment. But what they created, it looks like an infinity circle. And it's a really good tool that I've used in my licensure, is they say that everyone has a trigger, right? They're naturally or astute to something or not. And then we will pattern, we'll have a behavior in what that is. So let's say you're going to a theater. There's probably a place you prefer to sit in the theater, right? The mezzanine, the balcony, the floor, right? Of where that is within the theater. And so if I sit at that certain place all the time, right, I'm going to have certain experiences all the time. There's things that I can only see or create. And then there's a consequence, right? And so there's a behavior. I'll have certain people, like I'll tell you the experience of sitting on the floor, which are the higher seat experiences, you know, tickets. I get different experiences of who I talk to the left and front and back of me. And so then I create a reality, right? Of what I think of the people on the floor plus the people in the mezzanine or balcony. So if I change my behavior, it would lead to a different consequence, which would lead to a different reality. And so I like that they talk about is the more I change my behavior, I can change my reality.
Right. And if you don't change, then everything stays the same. And you stay in that zone that you don't expand or experience or go the ups and downs of life.
Absolutely.
And I now want to get on to this thing about fear.
Yeah.
Because that's something that we all have. And, you know, whether you raise your voice or not, but it's deeper than that. And you talk about what are the fear of saying and doing the wrong thing, the complexity of determining where and how to fit into change, worrying about speaking up, which we talked about, triggers, triggering by anger and experiencing sensitivity regarding a topic. That's this huge thing we're in now about we don't know what to say to each other in case we offend them or something. Give us your thoughts on all that.
Fear has to come from, I mean, you can have natural fear, but I try to find where did this begin? Where did this fear or this, I'll say roadblock has occurred for you to progress, right? That's all fear is. It's a roadblock or a perception. And so a lot of times when I'm coaching individuals, I'll ask if they say something, right, that seems very fear-based, I'll ask them, why do you feel that way? Did you experience anything that caused you to believe that way? And so it could be subtle, it can be informal, it could be passive, but finding where that fear is. So fear of speaking, I don't want to be in front of people. And, you know, I'm naturally shy. it's thinking that I'm different than you, that I'll be something wrong. And so if I find that concept of where the heart of the fear is, I just helped an organization, unfortunately, lay some individuals off. And so I was leading that committee, right? Talking about change. And someone said, I'm not going to help. This was a leader. This was one of the third in rank leaders that led a group, and they refused to participate in the exercise of learning who to lay off. I know that's a challenge, but you would know your people more than anyone else. And the person was refusing to participate. And I had to lean in to figure out why. And it really wasn't that they were refusing to participate, is they were fear that they would break the relationship, that the people thought that you're the one that laid me off. So it was easier to blame the higher ups instead of themselves. So it's the fear of broken relationships. And also they said, I feel like, because it was certain leaders in the room, that the leaders are trying to, you know, make us argue amongst each other. And I said, you create that environment, have that environment happen. So there were two levels of fear with this individual of not moving forward, of even doing the responsibility of their role, right, of leadership.
So is fear the biggest danger that we have for ourselves, or not understanding it, not dealing with it properly?
I would say that inadequacy, or the fear of it, is hard, right? You want to feel, I think sometimes we misplace that fear of superiority or being better by then making someone less than. It's kind of going back to that joke. Yeah. I said, well, at least we're not bad as the United States, yeah, right? Because then you're not taking that real face on accountability of how I can be better. So it's the fear of less than. And I think we all want to be valued, and it's kind of hard to have those conversations in doing that. But I think that fear is the core of a lot of missteps of, I would say, really happiness in our life.
Yeah. And fear, who was he? Was it Harry Truman said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Fear itself. Yes.
Yeah. So when you're drilling down in this whole thing of how to speak out, how to communicate, how to understand, we first have to identify and understand our own fears in order to, am I reading you correctly there?
Yes, we do. Yes. We have to understand. I saw someone in the comments, you know, it came up that it's our upbringing. And there's four sections that I talk about in our book of where then that perspective comes from. It can come from the home, of course, and the upbringing. Uh-huh. But you can be in a home and raised a certain way, but still have a different perspective. And that can also come from institutions you're a part of. So church that you're a part of, the school that you're a part of, the uni that you're a part of, right? Then the organizations, like the companies you work for, they instill also your beliefs of what that is. So that's the second. The third is the community, the area in which you live. So I would assume there's places that one way within districts in the UK is one way versus the other. Right. And that happens in South America, this city versus that city and the culture. So it's the place in which you live. Right. And that can change. And then lastly, is just really naturally of how you were born. Right. Yeah. You probably can look at your sibling, if you have a sibling or a family member, like we were raised in the same home. How is it that you believe that? It's because you're uniquely you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And and the time frames, and it goes to all those layers. Yeah. So there's so many layers, and finding out where that layer of the heart of that fear is very important.
It is. So a lot of this is our own responsibility to know who we are. I mean, it's that thing that you have in the, you know, in the air. You had your airport analogy. In the safety thing, it says, put the oxygen mask on yourself before you try to help others. Yes. So we have to know our weaknesses and our strengths is equally important. Kendra, we are about to close our podcast recording, but I have to ask you the Golster question, which is, whatever the reason, when things get really bad, we're talking about this a bit, what do you tell yourself to keep punching on and to keep going?
That's funny that you said punching. I have a new hobby. My new hobby is boxing. I actually have taken up boxing since August. It is so much fun.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, it's a gym. And the gym, it's really cool. I went there this morning. And the gym, you actually wrap your hands and everything. You put the gloves on. And it's circuit training. So you have 9 stations that you go to. And you actually can have a fight name. It took me weeks to figure out what my fight name is. And it's very challenging. You're punching and it's actually kickboxing and you're hitting things. I love it. But in that moment, as I'm learning, because I was very sore the first few weeks, it was the speed bag is still a challenge for me. And I'm like, one day I will be as fast as some of the people in the gym. And I was sitting there and I was trying to literally punch. And I said, I'm more than a conqueror. I'm more than a conqueror. I have this. And that is my fight name now. So I'll take that name. So my fight name is Conqueror, but with a K. And so that was a challenge. And so I think things that for me and I have a faith that the world is bigger than me, that you can get so stuck in yourself that you don't know. There's always someone that looks up to you. There's always someone that will miss you if you're gone. And you have to realize it's bigger than yourself, that you have to be you, uniquely you, not just for you, but you are the designedly proven for a purpose, but not just for yourself, like for others. And so it's more than me. And so that more than a conqueror is that I can handle this. And there's a power that's bigger than me that will help me when I fall, that will help me to be successful, that will help me be great. And also everything will be okay. And so that was my mantra, I think, of that moment. Well, I couldn't do the speed bag and it was hitting me, you know, and coming back of, I'm more than a conqueror. It's bigger than me and I can do this.
Kendra the Conqueror, that with a K. What a great ending we've got there. And we are going to talk more about boxing because Emma, who is with us, does boxing as well. So I'm going to put two together. And we had Emma with Bonnie Greer, one of our previous guests, talking about boxing. So this is going to be great. But that's it. Time's Wing Chariot is upon us for our podcast recording, which draws to a close. Catch our earlier Goals to Health and Wellbeing podcast with Lord Nigel Crisp, who used to run the NHS and knows all about staying as positive and well as can be. Please email concierge@golster.co.uk for any comments, complaints, questions, and praises. Until next week, stay safe, stay positive, stay active, be generous, socialize, understand others, make your voice heard, take up boxing, become a conqueror. Thank you all for being here, and thank you, Kendra Q. Dodd, Conqueror, for giving us such a fabulous rundown and conversation for the Goalster Magazine Show. Bye. You've been listening to a Goalster Magazine Show podcast. Check us out on www.goalster.co.uk. We hope to tempt you, your family, and friends into the exciting world of helping everyone live healthier and happier for longer. Find more podcasts just by Googling Goalster and podcast. I'm Humphrey Hawksley and hope you're with us again soon.